Everybody hear me okay? All right. Very good. Thank you for being here today. I greatly appreciate it. This is my 11th State of the City address, and it's one of the highlights for me. I really love to be able to come and talk about what's going on in the city. A variety of things, as you can imagine. We cycle through a lot of positives and negatives, and there's always something going on. And so a lot of times it's difficult to get that out to the media in little snippets. And so this always gives me that chance to focus on some things, talk about some of our challenges, talk about the positive things that are happening, and really what we need to kind of focus on for the next 6 to 12 months. And so as we go through this presentation, I ask you to bear with me to the end for questions. I hate to stop only because I've got a lot of material to go through, but if somebody has a really pressing one, you feel to raise your hand, and I'll be happy to call on you. But I prefer to wait to the end, and I'll give you plenty of time to do that. It's been pretty tough this past week. I tell you, losing a second police officer in a little less than 7 years has been pretty tough on our police department. Things have changed a lot out there. When I was growing up as a kid, everybody respected the law. Most people did anyway. And, today, things have changed a lot in the way that people just don't have a lot of respect for authority. And it's just unfortunate to see how much danger that our police officers and others that facing the public sometimes go through. And this past week is just a perfect example of that, of what can happen in just a split second. And so it's been really tough. I think that I wanted to start with Officer Pitts only because another example of a guy that was out every night with the street crimes unit dealing with the worst of the worst in our community. And I just really want to lift up all of our officers, but especially those that are kind of doing this stuff every day. They're out confronting criminals. I mean, we do this 100 times a week, like what happened last week. And any more people are turning to violence to think they're taking care of the situation. So the chief and a few other people were out in Washington, D.C., as you've heard. After the funeral last week, we had the memorial on Thursday, and then the police week is going on in Washington, D.C. right now. I think they're coming home tonight. But it's just been really tough, and this happens more and more often. So I just would ask all of you to be mindful of our law enforcement officers, all of our public safety people, but especially police officers. It's a dangerous world out there, and what we can on them. That thin blue line you always hear about, it's real, and it is pretty thin. And it's a good thing that they're out there defending us every single day. So I just wanted to do a little editorial thing on that because it's really been on my heart pretty heavily the last week or so. And every time you hear another story. So thank you, law enforcement. I know John or Sean and Mark are back there today. Thank you. Carry that message back to the guys and gals. All right, the first thing I want to talk about is our finances. That seems to be the point that the most discussion has been on for the last really 3 or 4 years, and it's really important that we establish a new baseline. Things have changed dramatically, and so there's a couple really important points here I want to make. We've had 3 straight years of a balanced budget, so out of our multiple budgets, out of our $90+ million annual budget, everything's balanced. 3 straight years it's been that way. You talk to people on the street sometimes, you see things on Facebook, and people just put so much false information out there, and it's very unfortunate. It is what it is. The facts are the facts, and that's what's most important. But 3 straight years, so 16, 17, and 18, and we'll be balanced from here on out. So those days are behind us to have an unbalanced budget. We had 92 total funds in 2017. 84 of those finished with a positive cash balance. 8 were negative balances, and 5 of those were federal grants. So that means 5 of those 8, they're always going to be negative. They can't be positive because we pay out money ahead, then we get reimbursed. So we had 3 funds that were negative at the end of the year. Those were the 2 golf courses and our health insurance fund, because the way the timing works, unless it has a big cash balance in it, which it usually doesn't, we a lot of times end the year because we don't get our revenues until January. So we've made tremendous progress. Just a few short years ago, we had about 14 negative balances, and two of those were federal grants. So from the perspective of the general fund, which is the most important, when it's one of those 92, the general fund balance at the end of 2017 was a positive $1.2 million. At the end of 2015, it was a negative $8.9 million. At the end of 2016, it was a negative $8.2 million. So we made some tremendous progress against that. In that general fund balance is a loan from redevelopment that carried over. So our true deficit is about $3.9 million in the general fund. And I'll talk about that in a few seconds here again. But we've gone from a basically an $8.9 million balance down to about a $3.9 million true negative balance. Even though we're positive, it's a little bit misleading because it has that loan in there. Our total cash balances at the end of the year for all the funds was $39.2 million. So that's what we had in the bank on 12/31/17. And in 2016, it was 35.9. So we've made some additional progress in putting additional funds back into our cash balances. TAW and redevelopment loan. I always want to talk about this because, you know, there's a lot of confusion about that, too, of why we do these two loans. The TAW is a tax anticipation warrant. We've done it 6 times now in the last 10 years, and it was done prior to me taking office a couple of times, too. So it's nothing new. A lot of entities use a tax anticipation warrant. Since we get most of our revenue in June and December each year, we need funds to be able to take us through those dry spells. Until we get enough cash of our own build up, we have to be able to go and have enough cash sitting on hand to be able to keep things running smoothly. And so we've taken out a TAW loan. We've reduced it by about $1 million, but basically we go out to the bank and we borrow money at a very low interest rate, and our only cost then is the interest, because we pay that back when we receive our property tax dollars in December every year. The redevelopment loan was something that we've moved money from one of our bank accounts to another bank account. We've done that so we wouldn't have to borrow as much from the public and pay the interest. So, once again, lots of entities, lots of municipalities, lots of school corporations use TAWs and borrow internally, and we use the redevelopment loans to do that. We currently have that $5 million redevelopment loan, and it's due and payable at the end of June, next month. We will pay that entire amount back, and then we're going to borrow $2 million to take us for the next year. So that'll reduce our internal borrowing permanently by $3 million. So that's a pretty significant step also. When we talk about government spending, you know, a lot of people say, we just need to cut more people. You know, I've heard that for a long time. We've done several studies to look at what we spend, what our staffing is, what our people get paid. In 2016, we were the 8th lowest out of 24 peer cities in Indiana. Those are Class 2 cities and a few large Class 3 cities that are even bigger than Terre Haute. And so in 2016, we were the 8th lowest out of those 24. We moved up a notch in 2017, so we're now the 7th lowest of per capita spending for the, you know, people who live in our community on how much we spend to operate local government, you know, Terre Haute Municipal Government. I mentioned assessed commercial values on here because I've talked about it for the last 3 years. I'm hopeful that some improvements and some changes will be made in that area. We've got some issues with commercial property assessments. We believe the city of Terre Haute's probably leaving $2 to $2.5 million on the table each year. The county's probably in the same range. And those are dollars that should be being paid into the system. They are underassessed. And so what happens when they're underassessed, everybody else has to make up the difference. And so they are paying, the rest of us, all of us, are paying for local government, whether it's the city or the county or any of the other entities. And so getting this corrected, I think, will be really, really important. I'm not sure what kind of a time frame we're talking about, but I know there's a lot of activity in that area, and the state of Indiana is beginning to look at some things because Terre Haute's not the only community that's facing this issue. And then I just wanted to touch on that general fund. Our plan then, by the end of the year, you know, we'll see what our property tax dollars are this year. We know what the estimates are. Maybe the assessed values have changed a little bit. Maybe we'll get a little bit more money this year. We won't know until we get our disbursement. But our general fund deficit plan, that $3.9 million I talked to you about earlier, we intend to cut that by another $2 million. But that will take us down to about 1.9 roughly for next year, and it'll be gone by the end of next year. That's assuming no new revenue. If we get any new revenue this year or next year, then we'll be able to get rid of that much quicker. State Board of Accounts audits are going on right now, both 2016 and 2017. So at first they were only going to do 2016. We were able to convince them to do both. Our 2016 audit will look very similar to the 2015 audit. I don't anticipate any significant findings, and the dollar amount will be generally the same, but the 2017 audit will be much more improved. Plus, we've talked about how we finished 2017 and ended with a positive cash balance in the general fund, increased our bottom line on cash. Our audit will be much better, which obviously will lead to our next Standard & Poor's and others. When we get our bond rating, probably the first of the year, we should see an improvement in that area too. So I am looking forward to, probably in November, we'll get the final results of the 2017 audit, and I can't wait until that happens. We're in the process of upgrading to a new financial software system. Our system was about 16 years old, and as you know, if you don't upgrade software in 16 years, it's not worth a whole lot. So we were having a lot of issues, stability problems, flexibility, and so we're getting everything converted over right now. It's been a long process. We have got all the data from 2005. That was the first year that the city had any of their finances on a computer. And so all the data from 2005 to 2016 has now been converted and tested and proven to be our official public record. 2017 is going through that process now. We'll be finished very soon. And then we'll be cutting over this Thursday for the 2018 information. So we got to go back and do some reentry and some things. But it's going to be a much more modern system, especially on the accounts payable side. It's going to help us tremendously. But it's got all the components to it that we need. We switched over to ADP for our payroll in January of this year. And so that's going very, very well. And then we just have to merge that ADP data into the new financial software system. So probably in about another 45 to 60 days, we'll be fully online with everything and all the bugs worked out. And this is going to be very much more beneficial for us internally to manage the finances of the city. Talk about sewage billing for a little bit. You know, subject comes up quite a bit every time people want to have a conversation about sewer bills. And so I get a lot of questions when I'm out in the public. I want to just give you some data from 2017. We send out almost 30,000 bills a month. That's the size of our delivery system. Active sewage billing accounts, we've got about 25,000 metered accounts, which means they're on Indian American water or Sealyville water. And then we've got about 3,500 well accounts. The average residential sewage bill is $49.56. That's our average. You don't average in the industrial and the commercial. Whenever anybody talks about sewer bill averages, you talk about residential. If we threw in ISU, the prison, of course that number would go up because there are some very, very large accounts that skew the numbers. This is the residential amount. The average household uses about 5.37 cubic feet of water, or 4,000 gallons, a month. And so we are still one of the lower bills in the state of Indiana. We've had 5 increases over the last years. And I just read the other day where Evansville, their average bill is going to be $90 a month in 2 years in Evansville. And they have a stormwater fee. So the last rate increase, which it says down here, I'll get to that, but the last rate increase came in January, and so that reflects that last year's data, so we'll see a little bit of a bump on that, not much. And so the other thing that we worried about, which we've told us happens, people start using less water. They figure out that their sewer bills directly related to their water usage, and so last year we had a 2.7 decrease in usage of CCFs. So you raise the rates, then people get smart and they say, okay, if I lower my water bill, then that means I lower my sewer bill, then obviously that affects the system. It's less we have to treat, but it's less revenue we have coming in. So what we will do next is a sewer rate study at the end of the year. We will take a look at this again. We'll get this year's worth of data with the 5% increase that came in January. And we will do a rate study. with using a financial firm that does those kind of things for us, so we can kind of look out probably for the next 3 to 5 years to find out what sewer rates we'll have to do in the future based on where we're at with our projects. 311 Citizen Contact Center. This has changed the way we do business in the city. We implemented this about 5 years ago, and we continue to see increased numbers. We take about 200 calls a day over 311. Now, not all of them turn into tickets. These are tickets. But we get about 200 calls a day. And from just questions, maybe, or how do I get a hold of so-and-so, or a lot of times they call us for county-related issues, but about 200 calls a day. These are the actual tickets that were entered into the system. So we did a little comparison from 16 to 17. So overall, about a 9% increase on overall service requests. Large item pickup is our big number. I mean, we have a tremendous amount of large item pickup. And we do this through Republic Services, and in a combination of some parts of the year, we have prisoners from the federal penitentiary. Other times of the year, we use our staff who are not grass cutting during the winter especially. And so we do a tremendous amount of large item pickup. Every week, we get multiple calls, as you can imagine. It's part of our contract with Republic Services. And most places have ended large item pickup. So I can't emphasize enough that when our contract expires, we will not have that in the future. It will go away. They've already ended it with all their other contracts that have expired or renewed. And so nobody's offering that. It's not just Republic, but the other large nationwide carriers. They just don't do that anymore. It is really important that we continue to do that, and the city will just, it would be a disaster. This last Saturday, a week ago, we had our cleanup, and we picked up the most items that day that we've done since I've been here. It was unbelievable how much stuff was dumped off at our dumpsters and beside our dumpsters. We ended up probably having about 16 full dumpsters total, and we only had 8 out for the public to use. So that's our big number. That's where we get the majority of calls, and that's what we deal with on a daily basis. And the other 4 categories are just limbs and those kind of things, brush, litter, where it's, blowing around, those kind of things. Not on a specific property necessarily, it could be, but those are things that are just need to be picked up. Excess weeds and grass, of course, now it's starting to pick up again. That's a big volume area too. And you can see that under stray animals and animal care, the numbers have gone down. There's been a lot of positive effort on behalf of code enforcement and some other groups in our community that are helping to spay and neuter animals, and our call volume is down there, so that's a very positive thing. And in tree and sidewalk evaluations, I'm kind of surprised that went down, but down 23%. We still get a lot of calls, but for whatever reason, those calls were down last year. So those are our top 5 categories on our 311 contact center. Talk about the police department for a few minutes. From a crime perspective, this is the 5th straight year of a reduction in crime in the city of Terre Haute. So you can kind of compare the years there. The most reports of crime, obviously, is in that burglary, theft, auto theft, all the things that fall into that not serious crime, if you will. They're all serious, but the bottom sections were the bad, really bad stuff is. So in 16, we had 2,800 reports of burglaries, auto theft, theft, a variety of those types of criminal activity. And so we had about a 14% decline in reports, and we had about a 2.76% increase in arrests. So we made 477 arrests last year on those type of criminal activity. When we arrest people, they need to go to jail. When they're in jail, they don't commit more crimes. And so that's been the whole key to this from the beginning, is the restructuring of the detective division and the Terre Haute Police Department to put people in groups and target on these crimes, and then get people arrested and put them behind bars so they can't commit more crimes. The second section, obviously homicides, robbery, aggravated assaults, rape, all the really serious crimes. We had 137 in 16, we had 131 in 17. So this 4.5% decline in reports, but we had a 40% increase in arrests. That can fluctuate a bit, but really it boils down to kind of going back to the street crimes unit, what our detectives do and what the street crimes unit does when they go out at night and other times and confront these really bad folks and get them arrested. So couldn't be any more proud of these results. And once again, five straight years of a drop in our crime. It's the lowest it's been in 24 years in the city of Terre Haute. And just very, very happy about that. Just since 2008, we've had a 51% drop in property crimes and a 20% drop in violent crimes. So, crime goes through cycles and waves, but we're doing very well here in Terre Haute. So I wanted to mention a couple things. We created a PIO position for the police department last year, which has turned out to be a really positive thing with the media and with the public. We get a lot more information out, and people help us solve crimes more than we've ever had in the past. And so really appreciate our public information officers. There's more than one, but Ryan Adamson kind of heads that up and has done a great job with that. And we recently bought 9 new police cars. Those units were put into service. They run 24 hours a day, so they work all 3 shifts. They're the pool cars, if you will, the ones that all of our officers don't have take-home cars. And so these cars will needed to replace the ones we had. Some of them were 98s and 99s. And so just glad we were able to make that happen. Fire department. We had 10,500 total responses last year, 7,800 basically EMS responses and 2,700 fire runs. 800 inspections completed by our IPI divisions. They do 2 things. They go out and do inspections of buildings, and then they also investigate the fires. So out of those fire runs, 2,700 fire runs, we had 200 fire investigations. That means there was an actual fire that did some damage, affected property or person, and so we did 200 investigations. Out of those, 81 were arson. So when you stop and think about that, that is a huge percentage of the, and that's pretty consistent with a lot of other communities, kind of our size and bigger. But that's a significant number. We made 28 arrests last year. So with our fire investigator on the fire department and with the police department, the prosecutor's office, they made 28 arrests last year in 2017 alone on those 81 arsons. Obviously, some people committed more than one arson. And there's some still cases that are open. So our IPI division has really grown. They've got some new revenue coming in now to support their activity. And our goal is to go out and make sure we have safe places for people to go. We find businesses sometimes that have one way to get in and out. They have things stacked up in front of their exits. They have no signs. They have no fire extinguishers. And people kind of push back on us like, government's getting too big here. They're getting in our business. But the problem is you're open to the public and you've got unsafe places for people to come and do business. And so I'm very happy with the direction we're going with our IPI division. And we're not trying to be punitive. We're not trying to be, overbearing. We just want places to be safe for people to go in our community. We hired 13 firefighters a year ago through a federal grant as we were losing a lot. And right, so we're pretty high, we're staffed very well right now where we need to be. But we'll begin to lose firefighters again through retirement. And so the numbers will slowly come back down. We ordered 3 new ambulances to replace our 3 that we bought several years ago. They're on a 6-year cycle of replacement. And a new ladder truck, which is on basically a 7- to 8-year replacement cycle. So those have all been placed on order, and we'll take delivery at the end of the year on those 4 pieces of equipment. And I just wanted to mention our training. We bumped this up since we came into office. Our ISO rating wasn't very good back in 2008, and it was mainly because of training. And so just last year, we're required, ISO requires us to have a minimum of 220 hours. We did 295 hours per firefighter last year in the city. So we are way above where we need to be, and we're going to continue to grow that to make sure they have all the training they need to do their job. Parks and Recreation. We're currently in the process of updating our 5-year plan. Should be done by the end of the year. Purdue Extension is helping us with the first phase of this to gather public input and taking a lot of our ideas and putting it on paper, and then we'll be bringing a consultant in to finish the last piece of it. And so it's a real critical time to provide feedback to the Parks Department. You can get online on Purdue Extension website. You can also access it through the Parks, through our website and the Parks page. But we'd love for you to get in there and provide some comments to our 5-year plan. The Deming Park pool was open all year last year. It'll be open this year. We made some major investment in it 2 years ago. I'm feeling really good about that. We've extended its life for a while until we kind of figure out in that five-year plan what the next phase of the Deming Park pool might be. There's a couple things here about the restroom locks. Get a lot of complaints about people going to the parks when the sun doesn't go down. Park doesn't close till 9:30, 10 o'clock, but you couldn't use the restrooms. So last year, we did Fairbanks Park and Deming Park. This year, we've done Collett Park and Maple Avenue Park. That was our four parks that get the most usage, into the evening. And so we've got automatic locks on those restrooms. So now we can leave them open, and then they'll close. Or when the door's shut, they'll lock at the end of the day. We've not had any issues with those. We've been using them at Deming Park now for well over a year and not had any issues with that at all. I thought we'd have more people prying the doors open, things like that, but we call out a maintenance guy if that does happen. Very little issue. And so people have been really appreciative. It's a small item, but it's had a huge public impact. And so we'll consider other parks as we move into the future, but those four were the big demand areas. Golf course update. The park board raised fees at the beginning of this year, and we're in the process of cutting expenses. We haven't taken that back to the city council yet, but we will. Kind of waiting on some financial data once we get everything loaded in for 2018 into our new system. So we're not giving up on outsourcing the management of it. That's not what the point is here. Our goal is to reduce the ongoing losses each year. And so by raising the fees and cutting the expenses, obviously we're going to make another impact on that. We have done some of that in the past, but made another big push. And so we will go see how the season goes here, see what our losses end up being, go back to the RFP process at the right time, and we want to make sure that we're being as efficient with the taxpayer dollars as we can when it comes to our two golf courses. The proposals we got put us in where we would have owed them a stipend, if you will, that would have been the same thing as what we're already losing. So we're hopeful that the changes we've made will put us in a better business position kind of across the board. And then I wanted to mention Ray Park just briefly. We've got some friends of Ray Park group that's really working on doing some things down there to kind of go beyond golf. We have tennis and golf down there. And so I want to be supportive of that. The city council recently just adopted a resolution. And so we're going to kind of move forward with some additional things coming into Ray Park over time. So that'll be part of our five-year master plan. The chapel roof at High Lawn Cemetery is getting replaced this year. It's very expensive. It hadn't been done in an extremely long time. But we do still conduct quite a few funerals out there at Highland Lawn, and we need to maintain that building. And then the pavilion roof at Collett Park will be done this year. We've got our quotes are in, and we're ready to award that bid here about any day. My guess is that will probably happen in July. And then a new dock at Fairbanks Park on the Wabash River. As you know, the ice flow came and destroyed it. We have a grant that's going into DNR that's due on June 1st. It may have already been submitted, but it'll be in by June 1st, that hopefully will pay for 75% of that. If we're not lucky enough to get that grant, then we'll do it ourselves. But we're hopeful that we'll find out here in the next 30 to 45 days whether we've been a recipient of that DNR grant. They paid for the first dock, and so we're very hopeful they'll pay for the second one. Infrastructure and projects. Here's the things we're focused on right now. 7th Street Phase 2 is that Hallman to Voorhees section. We've got a little bit of delay with Vectren right now, but my most recent information is that project, Hallman to Voorhees, will be completed in 30 days. So middle of next month, that'll be done, and then we'll start on that last section from Voorhees down to just north of Margaret. We don't anticipate any utility things down in the second section, but it seems like we run into utility issues on every major project that we have. Whether to research it to death, all these people come to all the planning meetings, and still things happen. So a little disappointing on that, but Vectren is doing their thing, and hopefully they'll get that completed as quickly as possible, and then we can move on to Phase 3 and then complete this entire stretch then by the end of the year. Margaret Avenue, Canal of 25th, our overpass. The original completion date's always been July of 2019. We were ahead of schedule, and then we got behind schedule over the winter when the utilities didn't get moved. They were supposed to have been done on August 31st. They got done on January 31st. So we're running a bit behind. But the weather has been very cooperative, as you all know, and so they're, you know, slowly moving, shaving a few days off here and there. Depending on what we run into in the future, we may get back on a schedule where that is open by, we originally thought it would be open by the first of the year. It's looking early spring now, so we'll just have to see how the rest of the construction season goes until December before they cut off in December and January. But they have until January of 2019. That's an MDOT determined date, not the city of Terre Haute, and they give these contractors very wide berth to get these projects done. So I'm just happy we're making some progress now and getting back on schedule then by the end of the year. Lafayette Avenue Phase 1 is from Cross Lane to Hawthorne. The bids came back last week, and they were over the engineering estimate. So we are, MDOT handled that process. What's happening is we have more money to spend on projects now, but the prices are going up. Now, I was talking to a couple of mayors yesterday who are doing a project. They were going to meet with the governor. And their bids came back on some projects that are higher. What's happening is these construction companies are picking and choosing what work to do now. They got plenty of work. And so that wasn't the case for the last few years. So I don't know what's going to happen with Lafayette right now, because it's a significant amount over. The lowest bidder was quite a bit over the engineering estimate. So that doesn't happen very often. Sometimes it's a little over or a little under, but it's always usually pretty close. In this case, it's a lot over. Third Street, I didn't put it on my slides, but MDOT bid Third Street out, and it was over budget. And so, and they only got one bidder on that because market's full. All these businesses that can handle a major project like Third Street, they only had one bid. So MDOT's going back to bid on that. I think they're getting responses back now. So that project's not off the table. It's just been delayed because of the bids coming in over budget. It's frustrating. So now we got a little bit more to spend, and now it's going to cost us more. So we'll see how much more we really have at the end of the day. Lafayette Avenue is going to be inconvenient for people. And then we got a phase two next year that'll be in front of the fast food restaurants. But as you all know, that is so desperately needed up there, and we're just going to have to fight through that. First and Holman intersection improvement. We are applying for Community Crossings grant on that one. The funding sources have changed on this a couple of times. We were originally going to fund it with federal dollars, but it was going to cost us about $400,000 more to do with federal money than do it with local money, because that's just how it works. We have a lot more guidelines and hoops to jump through. And so we're going to use local dollars for that project, but we're going to apply and move ahead with the project, but we're hopeful that Community Crossings will cover that First and Holman intersection improvement that's been on our books now for about 3 years. This will be the third year. Went through a long design process, had a big fight with the railroad, and we've got through all those hurdles now and ready to actually put the project out to bid, hopefully here in the next few months. The First Street Boulevard, that's, I had a lady come up to me the other day and say, you need to add a third lane on First Street and not put grass and trees in there and left turn lanes. And it's important to me that we make that look like a boulevard. So it has some aesthetics as we trying to get more people to come to the river. We're going to be putting left turn lanes in, and so we still accomplish the same goal than having asphalt down the middle of the street. Another suggestion was let bikes and people walk down the middle, and it's just not safe to do that. And so we're moving ahead with this project in sections. Indiana State University has been a big partner with us on that north section. We're finishing our part on that now, and then we'll take on another section, and then we'll have one more to do next year. So that will be mostly grass, a few trees, easy maintenance, and left turn lanes throughout that stretch all the way south of Farrington. And then our paving budget this year is $1.8 million. So in the past, it's been about $1 million. So we've got a little bit extra edit money we've put in there, a little bit extra MVH money, obviously, because of the new gas tax and excise tax that everybody's paying. And so we raised it about $750,000. And so our first paving project will be Ohio Boulevard, the westbound lane. Plant opened up about a month ago, And we will start then from that point on doing a variety of things. Lafayette Avenue from Locust all the way up to Fort Harrison is going to be paved this year. Lafayette's going to be kind of a mess, but at least the paving will go quickly. We're going to spend pretty much all that $1.8 million this year on paving. I wanted to talk about some things from a Department of Redevelopment perspective. Over the last year and a half, really 17, the end of 16 and into 17, the BEP program, we demolished 62 homes. It cost about $634,000 to do that. And then in 17 alone, we did 60 homes with our edit funds, $411,000. So there's a lot more to go, no question about that. It's a very tedious and drawn out and legal process to tear a house down, but that's the most we've torn down in a year and a half period, basically, in a very, very long time. And so we try to get the worst of the worst, but it doesn't always work out that way. We've got some now that I know that are still out there that are either in bankruptcy, insurance settlement, arson investigation, whatever. They can't be torn down until they go through the legal process. But that's what we've been able to do through the Department of Redevelopment, kind of the end of 16 and then all of 17. So very happy about that. This year, we actually have an increase in our community development block grant and home funds. First increase since 2010. We're still down a lot because every year they cut it. But we actually are going to get a little bit more money. So those funds basically go to neighborhood improvements, the 13th and 14th and Holman area that I'm going to talk about next. And then the home funds go to housing-related projects. So it's good to have another $100,000 or so dollars to spend on those kind of activities, considering we've been losing about that much over the last few years. So one of the projects they'll continue to do this year is kind of north of 13th and 14th and Holman, kind of up to the northeast from there. They'll be doing another big section there and then another big section next year. So we're ready to go to construction on this year's phase, and then we're doing the design for the 2019 phase of that. There's a major stormwater drainage project going on State Road 46. I get a lot of questions about that. People think something is being built out there. What we're doing is getting the water from the east side of 46 to Holman Lake so then it can get to Thompson Ditch and get to the Wabash River. Any more development out there would be a real issue for us. And so this project, we've known about it for a long time, but we're doing it now. It's about a $1.8 million project to get the water underneath 46. There's a really small pipe, so we're putting in a bigger pipe, and then the underground piping to get it to basically a retention pond that will overflow into Holman Lake. So that's being paid for out of those revenues out there in the 46 TIF district, and then the state came in and gave us about $900,000 to support that project. 13th and Holman site cleanup, we continue to move forward with that activity. Got a consultant on board and working with the state of Indiana to look at some funding sources. We think we've got about another $7 or $8 million of cleanup to do down there. About 22 acres are left to clean up. So our goal is to get that clean so we can get that property on the market and get somebody in there doing some kind of commercial or light industrial type of activity. And there's a downtown lighting project that we're going to be putting some additional ornamental lighting up that we've got. And so that's being done by the Department of Redevelopment. That engineering work is going on right now, and then we'll bid that project out very, very soon. It's a small project, but important. Sanitary district and wastewater treatment plant projects. So we're moving into phase two. Probably be close to $55 million worth of work between the main lift station to replace our main lift that was opened up in 1961. Basically gets all of the stuff to the wastewater treatment plant. It pulls it through the pipe and pumps it down there. Our high rate treatment facility, we put phase one in a couple of years ago, and now we're doing phase two of that. It is kind of an overflow situation. When you have a major rainstorm, it runs it through this high rate treatment facility, removes all the solids, and then treats it with the UV process before it's put back into the river. And so it's a very positive thing. It doesn't have to go through the plant, but it's a less expensive option than storing it and sending it to the plant. Phosphorus removal we're doing at the plant right now. The design was finished and the construction work has begun. It's a small project. It's $1 million. But it just goes to show you, sometimes people say, well, our sewer bills went up and you've done this work. Now, why would sewer bills or why would you need extra revenue to do something? Well, IDM came in and said all wastewater treatment plants need to remove phosphorus. They hadn't done that in the past. And so we're spending $1 million to take phosphorus out. I'm sure that another year or two, they'll come up with something else that's in it, and we'll need to spend another $1 million or more to remove that. We just don't know what that is today. And then we're going to be doing a green infrastructure project, probably in conjunction with ISU, the downtown area. It's beginning the design phase right now of that. So that's all part of our phase two long-term control plan for sanitary district and wastewater treatment plant. Economic development. Just so talk about a couple recent successes and things that are starting to happen now. You know, the Riverfront Lofts and Annex 41 are both to be completed in August. You know, that's, I mean, it's almost $50 million just in those two projects. Pyrolex, you know, their building is up now. It's not completed, but the building is up. That's a $30 million investment with 55 new jobs, over $20 an hour on those jobs. GATX, $38.5 million project with 60 new jobs. A lot of those jobs are welders, so they need many more welders here in the community like some of our other entities do. But that they'll be repairing railroad cars up there. They already do it, but this will be a major expansion of that, what they do here in Terre Haute. Tredegar made their announcement, a $25 million expansion with 34 new jobs. Select Genetics, which is, you know, of course, in the industrial park, their building is going up. $30 million project, 100 new jobs. Elementia, Allura. I went down for the opening here recently, and boy, it was just nice to see that building, a huge investment that was made by the county, Economic Development Commission, and county commissioners, county council a few years ago, and then it closed up when Certainty went out of business. These guys have come in, and they've got the plant up and operating, and right now about 70 people are working there, and it's just kind of the main first shift, and they're moving into a second shift. They hope to go to three shifts eventually, so there'll be more staff hired once. See how the market plays out. So they have three plants in the United States. We're one of those three. And then I just mentioned these last few things because there's a lot of activity there. The former Pillsbury / Kellogg's plant in Sealyville, we've all heard that Saturn Pet Care is going to be moving into there. We hope that all the final deal is all done and they get started on that. We've been working with them for about 3 years. They were originally going to build in Terre Haute, or they wanted to build, and they've decided this is a great solution for them. The Pfizer, former Exubera facility, has been getting some attention lately, so the county is really doing a good job, Steve Witt, of getting that marketed, and I know he's been out there and had some people out there just pretty current that are very interested in that property. We'll see where that takes us. It's a long process, but that's good that they're able to market that. The Lighthouse Mission with Miller Parrott Lofts, construction will begin next year in 2019. So we'll see some improvement there at 14th and Half in Wabash. And then the old YMCA building, they didn't get their funding in this cycle, but they're coming back at it. We're actually meeting with them later this week, and they're putting a different financial package together. So they would still like to bring some housing into that facility. So, you know, more power to them. We'll see if they're able to put the funding package together to make that happen. So here's some economic development strategies I think we really need to focus on, and not just the city and the mayor and city council and others, but us as a whole. There's some really great opportunities here for us as a community. One thing is workforce development, skills development, getting people trained for these jobs. Welders is an example. GE Aviation, Stark Industries, GATX, they all need welders. And most of these jobs will pay $45,000 to $50,000 a year if you have a certificate. All you got to have to do is a welding certificate. And so it's technical, but it's not that technical that most people can't do that. In order for us to continue to lure these companies here, we got to be able to provide the people to do the jobs. And so the state has really done, I'm really happy with the governor and his focus on workforce development. He took the former mayor of LaPorte, Indiana, a good friend of mine, Blair Milo, and put her in charge of an area that's related to this workforce development. We've got to be better. And you know, our K-12 does a great job, our higher ed does a great job, but there's some people kind of just fall through the cracks. They graduate from high school, they don't go to college. How do we make sure that they're trained for something? And so we're counting on the state. You know, we don't have any local dollars to do much with that. It's state and federal dollars, but there's a real emphasis by the governor to make sure that we're getting the right people in the right place. And so I continue to promote that because every mayor will tell you that's the biggest challenge we face. The state's doing great, luring business to Indiana, but we keep hearing the same thing. There's not enough people to take the jobs. So I'm going to just keep beating that drum into the future that everybody's got to think about how do we play a role in that workforce development and individual skill development. Defense development opportunities. We've had, I think, 4 or 5 meetings now. We have a defense development task force here in Terre Haute. We're meeting with governor's staff and others because it's a big push by the state of Indiana to bring more defense contracting dollars here. We're getting beat out by all the surrounding states. They're getting a lot of contractual opportunities that we're not getting. So the governor sees that and is focused on that. He's got some staff people in his office, on his staff, that are just focused on this. And so through the chamber's efforts and some others, we've had multiple meetings. We've got another one coming up here that I think June 6th is when it is. And we are going to make our push for Terre Haute to get some of these jobs. As we all know, there's more money in the national defense budget. They're going to be doing more activity related to high technology kind of things, whether it's unmanned systems or anything along those lines. And Terre Haute's the perfect place to benefit from that. In one of our meetings, we told them about all the space that's around the airport and to the east of the airport. They were not aware that there was 4,000 acres out there that could be developed. And so all of a sudden, we're kind of on the radar screen with a lot of people here. And so we're really focused on trying to figure out how do we look at what can we do here as Vigo and Clay County to tap into the defense development opportunities that's really going to be pushed hard by Governor Holcomb. I personally think we need to do more with our small development center at ISU and Launch Terre Haute, the Chamber, the EDC, West Central Indiana Economic Development. We're going to have to find a way to kind of partner on some of these things. We talk about workforce development, we talk about defense development, all those things. We need everybody kind of singing to the same sheet of music here. So one of my personal focus areas will be to kind of work to bring some of those relationships when it comes to this defense development specifically. How do we all play a role in that? Everybody's busy and everybody's doing things, but what we're talking about, this defense development thing, is you're talking about billions of dollars are going to be spent in the United States, and they're looking at places other than California and Texas where it's very expensive to do business. So we got to find a way to tap into that. So I mention that only because I'm going to do a specific effort to help bring some people together and see how we can tie that to this process. I wanted to talk about some economic development strategies when it comes to funding. It kind of ties back to infrastructure, but community crossings is alive again. They just announced last week that there's another round. As I said, we're applying for that. NDOT has also rolled out a local tracks rail program. So we are submitting the 13th and 8th Avenue overpass for that funding. That's due August 1st, I believe. And so all these things lead to economic development opportunities for us if we continue to invest in our infrastructure. The third thing I wanted to talk about was opportunity zones. The governor submitted 3 of our sites here in Terre Haute. It's basically kind of from the hospital down through ISU, the downtown area, and the south end of it kind of goes down to 13th at home and in and out of 46th area. That's our 3 opportunity zones. Well, what you get from this is if you come and make an investment, you get a 25% in your federal reduction in your federal taxes on your profits off whatever you invest in. And so it's not the only carrot that's going to drag them in here, but it is a huge financial boon for somebody who comes and builds a new building, operates a business, and then for 10 years they get a 25% reduction in their taxes on the, you know, what they make off that business. And so we're hopeful that we'll get the final approval on all that. I mean, it kind of has to go through the federal chain, but we're feeling pretty good about that. And that's just a whole new tool in the toolbox to be able to offer in some pretty strategic areas for us. Then I just wanted to note, I mentioned this in the when I talked to the chamber earlier in the year, when I do my own analysis and I talk to mayors all the time. We have multiple meetings a year. We share economic development data. But when I look at the tracking of the job, so last year in 2017, I tracked it for the entire year, all the announcements that were made. I suppose there may have been some that weren't announced, but mayors hardly ever take the, they announce jobs. They don't ignore that. And so last year in the state of Indiana, of the jobs announcements that made it to the media, 80% of those were in existing businesses. So it's not like you're going to land all these, and even though we have new businesses coming, 80% of the jobs that were announced, job creation, was existing businesses that are already here in Indiana doing their thing. So we got to think about that locally too. It's the exact same thing. There's nothing different about Terre Haute. Yes, you're going to be out recruiting new businesses, but most of the job growth is going to come by helping people to be successful. So when you talk about, you know, a Stark Industries at the airport that has grown dramatically, and they can double in size now if they can find the staff. I just talked to them last week. They're ready to hire 40 people now, but they can't because they can't find them. But most of these jobs come from people who are already here. So that's really what our focus has got to be. How do we help them to get their raw material suppliers here cheaper, or how can we move things through an infrastructure perspective? But that's where the real where the rubber meets the road. Planning and collaboration initiatives. So there's some things that we're working on right now that I think are really, really important. West Central 2025 is an initiative. The Chamber's kind of helping to lead that, but it includes multiple counties around us. We have always operated just like the other counties have, you know, pretty isolated. There's some things that overlap, but there's a lot of isolation when it comes to economic development work and other kinds of things. So our goal is to develop a regional plan. We've had two meetings so far, mayors and commissioners and EDC people and Chamber of Commerce presidents from, we even had them came over here from Edgar and Clark County in Illinois to participate. And so we are trying to just get everybody to say that something that happens in Sullivan is good for Terre Haute and vice versa. So we're getting everybody on board with at least having the discussion. You know, everybody's still, there's turf battles and there's things that happen, there's silos that exist. But we're going to do a better job because as it ties into regional cities and our regional development authority on the next line, the state are going to, they're basically going to fund things that there's a regional initiative. They're not going to fund people individually. And so you'll come together collaboratively and then you will seek funds to help do projects. And we've got to be a bigger player in that game. We're not the only one. Some folks here made a trip down to Evansville, and then we made a trip to Fort Wayne that I went on. And Fort Wayne's probably got it figured out better than anybody, I would say right now. I mean, way better than Indianapolis and a lot of other places. Where they're doing tremendous, they've got 8,000 jobs open right now up there. But they have the same problem. They can't fill those 8,000 jobs because technology-related issues with the staff or, you know, potential staff. So our goal is to do some of this. They have 11 counties up there in their group. We're not that big. We have got to do more in order to get the funding and get the support of the governor and the legislature on things that will help us to grow our local economy. So that's going to be a real point of emphasis, and it's going well so far. I mean, we have a lot of work to do, but it's going very well. Talk about plan updates briefly. The Metropolitan Transportation Plan is being updated this year. It's our multi-year plan, 25-year plan for the community. So everything that's going to be in transportation gets in that plan, and then we update it every year. We update the Transportation Improvement Plan that is part of that. The Terre Haute Parks Plan, as I mentioned earlier, is going to be updated this year. We are going to be doing an update on the Downtown Terre Haute Plan. It's 10 years old, and so it's time to do that. We haven't started that process quite yet. And the Riverscape Plan is 10 years old now, and so we'll be starting the updating process on the river, Wabash River, and the Riverscape connection to that. Later this year, we'll get that process started. And then the next generation of Terre Haute Tomorrow. You know, just a few short years ago, the Terre Haute Tomorrow group came up with our strategic plan for the community. But not a lot of things have happened out of that. And so there's a lot of good material in there, but for a variety of reasons, it really doesn't have an owner. And so that kind of ties back into the West Central 2025. We're going to try to use some of those things and, you know, not recreate the wheel by any means, but we have got to have that strategic planning single document that reflects all these different things that we're doing. I threw workforce development up there again just because can't emphasize it enough. I met with Ivy Tech recently, and they're doing some things, and I just, boy, that's really where we're going to be successful, if we can do some things with workforce development. And then per capita income, which ties directly into that. You know, the United Way is reinventing themselves on how they're going to do funding and supporting things, and this per capita income is critical. You know, we're pretty low here. There's quite a few communities in Indiana that aren't where they should be, and we're one of them. We've got to raise that income in the household, which takes care of a lot of these things. You know, it helps keep families together. They're able to pay the bills. They're able to, you know, do some things that make them more productive in the community. They buy a house. You know, all those things that go towards helping Terre Haute be a better place. So I want to be supportive, one, of what the United Way is doing, but if we can get that workforce development activity going, we've got a lot of new jobs coming. We've just got to make sure that we're raising the income in the households and we've got enough people to do these jobs. Items of interest. So these are just kind of a collection of a few things I wanted to share with you. We did a health insurance audit last year. We removed about 18 people off our plan, which wasn't much, but I felt good about that. We've got about 1,200 insured on our plan. And then we're going through the renewal process right now, and we're not going to have an increase in our health insurance costs for City of Terre Haute employees this year. So very happy about that. But we're in a good spot right now and really trying to do some things to manage drug costs a little bit more. That's a big one for us. But I just really feel good about kind of where that's headed. We're trending in the right direction the last 2 years, actually, on our health insurance program with the City of Terre Haute. So I want to talk about the convention center for a few minutes. As you all probably have heard, the legislature approved House Bill 1242 yesterday, which was a tax bill that we were able, through a variety of very positive efforts, Senator John Ford was instrumental, along with RJL Solutions and our other legislators and the governor, and leadership in the House and Senate both, to help us get that in that bill. And so we had a standalone bill. It got folded in. It was going to be pulled out. We're the only one that got anything like that. Many other communities were asking for food and beverage tax, and it's coming. It's going to be everywhere eventually. But the legislators would rather have individual projects. So if you come and just say, we need food and beverage tax for the general fund, no, it's not going to happen. If you say you need food and beverage tax for a convention center or something that's going to increase tourism, then we're good with that. And so it took us about 3 years to get it done, but I couldn't be any happier that that big step has happened. So now the state recognizes that they want to help Terre Haute out by giving us this tool. So the next step needs to obviously go to the county council later on. There's no hurry here. We just needed to get that major hurdle out of the way. And so that's going to be big. Now, once again, you know, you read some Facebook posts and things, and people say people are not going to go out to eat, they can't afford it. You know, it doesn't amount to much. It's a 1% tax. You know, if you go and buy a couple of nice steak dinners and have something to drink, and you spend $50, your bill will go up 50 cents. And so that money will all go to the CIB that will fund the convention center. And then down the road, we have other projects in mind that we may do. You know, who knows when and what time frame that'll be in. But we've created a CIB that can create these entities, these things in our community that will draw people. Talked to David Patterson the other day. In 2018, our tourism industry is going to be about a $40 million impact on our local economy. Most people would say, what do people come to Terre Haute for tourism for? There are so many things, and I just couldn't put it all on here. I didn't do him a service because he sent me a list. We've already had 5 major events in Terre Haute already, not even including, like, the graduations and things. These are just specific events that are organized by groups, and we've got a whole bunch more. I'll talk about a couple of them here in a minute. But his estimate, based on hotel, gas, you know, all the things they do, shopping, it's going to be about a $40 million impact this year, which is up a few million from last year. Huge impact. With the convention center, it'll grow really fast after that. We need a convention center. There's no reason we shouldn't have one. Bloomington's doubling the size of theirs now. They just adopted their food and beverage tax a couple months ago. The legislature gave it to them 10 years ago, but they just adopted it through the county council. But they're doubling theirs. Well, everybody says, well, who's going to come to Terre Haute for a convention? They turn them away all the time, 200 and 300 people conventions. Can't come to Terre Haute because we have nowhere to put them. And so this is going to be a huge positive impact. Everybody that's done one, Kokomo's in the process of doing one now. And none of these compete with Indianapolis or any of that. These are conventions that will come to Terre Haute-sized markets. Police station. We are going to be doing a police station. It's never been off the table. The timing hasn't been good from a financial perspective. And then some other options have popped up along the way to consider as other alternatives to building new. And so we're still working, vetting that process. We're updating our construction numbers that we had from a year and a half ago. When we get our audits done, I am certain that our bond rating will go up, and so that'll help us too from a bonding perspective. So that is still a top priority for the city of Terre Haute. We will get out of that building. It's in poor condition. I don't want to put a dime in it. We're just doing the minimum things that we have to do. When the roof leaks, we fix it, but we're not going to replace the five roofs that are there on the different buildings. But we're going to get a police station done. So as we get a few more months down the road here and I get these audits back, we'll be able to have a much more public conversation about our specific strategy and the calendar. The goal would be to start construction next year. That's the plan. Long-term strategy for wastewater treatment plant. You know, Terre Haute competes. One of the things that rolled out from them was, you know, which we'd already been looking at it for a couple of years, but it was good to see some additional support from the community about, let's look at our options. You know, Westfield thought they would get $30 million out of their wastewater treatment plant, and they sold it for $90 million a few years ago. They took all the money and invested it into the new Grand Park up there. That's what they decided to do, $40 million park. But we need to look at our long-term strategy. We need to find out how we control rates. We need to find out how we stay in compliance with federal and state guidelines and find out if there's any, you know, business opportunity with that. So over the next year to year and a half, there's a group that's being formed right now, and we'll take a look at, you know, what the options might be. There's a variety of different ways to do it, but just to see if there's a more efficient way or a more financially beneficial way for the ratepayers. And so you'll hear more about that in the future. We're not ready to talk about any details yet because we're just forming the team. Turn to the River project is still moving right along. Mary's here today. We're going to, that's that stretch from really 3rd Street to the river, right through the government campus. And so the design work is underway. City and the county are both on board with helping us get people to turn to the river. And so it's been a great partnership with the local folks who are spearheading that, and city and county are both on board to help make that a reality. So just glad that we'll start to see some and hear more a lot about the specific details and the construction timeline. And I just wanted to mention a couple monthly things that I do, because some people kind of forget about that. But I'm on WFIU the second Tuesday of every month. They actually run it on Wednesday. They tape it on Tuesday, run it on Wednesday. I'm on WTHI once a month on Friday morning. WTWO with Live at 5 once a month, WISU on more of a quarterly basis, and WFYI kind of on a quarterly basis. I just taped one when I was in Indianapolis yesterday with WFYI, and they're going to be coming over and doing some video things. So there's a lot of interest in Terre Haute. There really is. And so I think it's important to continue to communicate as much as we can. It's really hard for me to get a lot of these things out because there's a lot of moving targets. There's things that aren't finalized, and you know, it's just a good way to get the message out there. And then I'm going to be doing a few community meetings later this year. Not exactly like I did my neighborhood summits. You know, the numbers went down quite a bit on my neighborhood summits, but I'm going to do a few community meetings just to get some feedback on things as we move forward, and just kind of try to do a few more opportunities to give people a chance to ask questions. You know, they'll send an email to us, but they won't put their name on it. Or they'll call our office over the weekend or at night when we're not there and leave messages and things. Well, I'd love to talk to them. It's okay. You could not like something we're doing or whatever, but when they don't give us any way to get back with them, or they give us a fake email address, which people do, it's really hard. And so I think we just need to kind of, you know, there's a lot of discussion about the schools, what they need to do, and the jail, and you guys know it all just gets wrapped up into what's local government doing. So we're going to do our part. You know, today we're doing this live on our YouTube channel. WTHI's picked the feed up. You know, we're going to be doing a lot more of that. We've got a staff person now to help us with our social media activity, and it's just we're really going to try to push a lot more information out and do some things that we've not been able to do in the past. And then I just wanted to mention ribbon cuttings. It had 43 in 2017. That was the second most. I don't remember what year it was now, but I did 47 one year. But I've already done 23 this year, and I've got six more scheduled in the next week, 2 weeks, I guess it is. So we may double ribbon cuttings. And, you know, the majority of these businesses are new businesses or expansions. Every once in a while you have a relocation or something. But the majority of these people are still in business, too. And so it's been pretty amazing. I appreciate the Chamber organizing those events for me, David and staff over there. I see a couple of you. Thank you for that. But I tell you what, it's good to promote those people investing in our community. They're mostly small businesses. We have a few big ones, but they're mostly small operations. And in order for them to be successful, they need community support. And so I couldn't be any happier about the volume. Some important dates I wanted to share with you. So, Talks Away Day, they just got that scheduled. That's Solid Waste District, which the city is a part of, will be on September 22nd. We get calls, multiple calls a week about when the next Talks Away Day is. So let's get that out there to the public. It'll be September 22nd to Vigo County Fairgrounds. Drive in, they take care of you, you drive out. It's got to show a driver's license that you're from Vigo County, because you can't bring it from another county. That's what they try to do. So that's the Talks Away Day. Our fall cleanup day will be September 29th. As I said earlier, I think we probably picked up twice as much trash in this one as we have any other time, and it was just unbelievable. I don't know if they just were saving it up or what was going on, but it was a disaster, really, afterwards, because we had so much, and it was very difficult to deal with it. But we got it all taken care of Monday morning, first thing. Leaf pickup will begin sometime in November. That'll be a question I'll start getting in about 2 months. Is there going to be leaf pickup again? Yes, we have fixed it, so our budget is fine. We don't have to worry about leaf pickup. It's a really important function. When we get into that season, we'll probably get 50, 75 calls a day about when you're picking up my leaves every day. And so it'll start as soon as the majority of leaves fall off the trees. That's what we always do. We can't get out too early or we'll miss a lot. So that will start again, and it's a permanent service to the citizens of the community. Turn to the River Picnic, June 1st at City Hall. We had our first event last year. A couple hundred people showed up, I think, maybe 300. Tremendous turnout. So more people know about it this year, so who knows what we'll have. But at City Hall out there in between the courthouse and City Hall, we'll have food trucks and some entertainment, and just it's going to be, I think it'll probably be a lot bigger this year than it was last year. The whole goal is keep raising awareness for Turn to the River Project and just really trying to get people to use that space between City Hall and the courthouse. It doesn't all have to be negative. You know, most of the people go to court, most of the people come city court or county court. It's not a good day for them. We want more people to visit that area and use that area in a positive light. Terre Haute Air Show. I know you've all heard about it, but it's going to be an amazing draw. And they're expecting probably in the 70,000 people in town for those 2 days. Ticket sales are going well. Plenty of sponsorships. I won't say plenty because Rick Berger would not be happy if I said he had plenty. But they're already planning for the next air show in 3 years. And so this is going to be all paid for, and with money hopefully a little bit left over to plant the seeds for the next one. This is going to be a big deal. And we're getting some statewide and some Midwest attention because there aren't very many air shows this year. I've been told there's two others. You know, Dayton always has their big one, and there's a couple others in Indiana. Very small, very small. And so this is going to be a huge draw. It's phenomenal what the team has put together to do that. And, you know, last year the Terre Haute Regional Airport was Airport of the Year. And so they've done some tremendous things out there. There's a restaurant out there now. All the space is leased. They're talking about building some new spec buildings and hangars out there. So things are going very well at the airport. And then the Coca-Cola Festival, our first one. And, you know, with what's going on with the Vigo County History Center and opening up here this year, it's going to be another great event in our community. So I just wanted to put those up there only because I think it's really important that we support these activities in our Terre Haute community. So, that's enough of that. Let me think about a couple things just to wrap up with. First of all, I would say that I'm just really excited about just the overall positive things that are happening in the community. Yes, we still have challenges, no question. Yes, we have issues of a variety of things, but overall, things are going extremely well. We're getting much more on the radar screen with the governor and the state legislature, and that just goes to show you what we're able to do with this food and beverage tax. I mean, Greenwood's been trying for about 6 years now, and they didn't get it again this year. And I'm not picking on Greenwood, and Mayor Mark Myers is a good friend of mine, but you know, we were able to do some things that we haven't been able to do in the past, and it just because of the collaboration and the effort here. The way the people rallied around the casino issue a year ago, whether you like the casino or not, people were supportive of the process of bringing more economic development to the community. This food and beverage tax, it's not going to be a bad thing. It's really not. Nobody wants to raise taxes, but it will help us to fund something that we can all benefit from. It's going to help us put us as more of a destination. It's that quality of life, quality of place things that we need. And we just, when you tell people no all the time, it's not a good answer when you can't do something. Our public safety is top-notch. And, you know, Terre Haute Competes went through that process with the fire department and agreed with us that we're staffed at the right levels. I couldn't be any more proud of our public safety, our public servants in public safety. I'm very, very proud of all of them. You know, the jail thing's going to get sorted out. School thing's going to get sorted out. Our long-term control plan stuff will continue to be sorted out. We're going to get a new police station. Those things are going to happen, but we have to just make sure that we're being prudent with the taxpayer dollars and doing things in the right order, the right timing, and making sure that we invest in ourselves to make this a better community. And so this is probably one of the more exciting ones that I've been able to do for the last couple of years. Finances have been tough. We will, at the end of next year, our tax cap credits will be $100 million just for the city of Terre Haute. So between the sanitary district and the city of Terre Haute General Fund and parks and the other funds that get property tax dollars, we'll have $100 million that we didn't collect because of the caps. And that's just the city of Terre Haute. We're about 45% of all the taxes collected in the county. So we're living with that. It's a good thing. It's a good tool for us to say we have low taxes. But you got to invest in yourself. And if you don't do that, we're not going to be able to grow this community. And so everybody's on board with collaboration and trying to move things forward. It's good to have you, Dr. Curtis, as the new president of Indiana State University. And we welcome you here. Good things, great things happening there. You know, last Friday we got to walk through the new Health and Human Services building. We've just seen about $300 million of investment downtown in the last 12 years. ISU's probably had $250 million of investment in the last few years. There's a lot of money being spent, a lot of things happening, people being put to work. Yet sometimes we get bogged down in the past and we get bogged down in negative things. We need to all stay, you know, take the high ground, take the high road, inject into the system, be a part of it. It's great to see new candidates running for office. But that's all good. That's all good for our community. It's just we've all got to find a way to take Terre Haute to that next level. And it takes everyone to do that, not just the mayor, not just the city council, commissioners or county council. It's all of us collectively. So that's my message, is more collaboration and more results will come from that. And I've seen some pretty amazing things the last 12 months that I had not seen in my time here. And I've lived here my entire life. So we're really on a roll, and we just got to take advantage of that now. So I thank you for being here. It's a humbling job, you know. Some of the stuff I do is fun. Some of it's not. Yesterday was a good day. Last week wasn't a good week. We all just have to go with the ebb and flow of that. But please keep our police officers in your thoughts and prayers. It's going to be a long healing process. You know, people are still thinking about Brent Long, and then this second one is upon us now. And so I just ask you to really be conscious of that, and anything you can do in your little part of the world to get people to have more respect for law enforcement and authority in general, whether it's schools or anything else. I just think that we've got some work to do, and it scares me a little bit. So it's an exciting time for the community, and just really want to see good things happen. So thank you, and just appreciate being here today. So I'll open it up to questions now of anything that I covered or I didn't cover. I'd be happy to answer a few. Got a few minutes here. Yes. Well, as part of our long-term control plan, you've got to inject some green infrastructure into what you do. So what that basically means is we need to capture some of the stormwater and keep it somewhere and let it just go back into the ground. So we've hired a firm to design our project. So right now I can't tell you exactly what it is, but it'll be pervious concrete or pervious asphalt. It may be rain gardens. It may be just holding areas. It'll be things where, like on Indiana State's campus or the downtown area, you get a heavy rainfall and the water really doesn't have anywhere to go. It currently goes into our combined sewer system, but we can't do that. We've got to reduce that going into the old system. And so we'll roll the project out once we get it designed and we get approval with the partners. Not recycling, it's water. It's stormwater. Yes, we do. And when Republic has graciously agreed to provide us with some recycling dumpsters, the number of people who are on our recycling program continues to shrink. People just don't want to do that. They take it to Goodwill, take it to ISU. They'd rather do that than pay the fee. Fine. But we're going to need to do more that's included in the contract, included in our trash fee that we charge. And so last year, we agreed to that. This year, we're going to roll that out. So you'll see it in the media. But we need people to use it responsibly, not just come and dump, you know, their Wendy's or McDonald's bag in there, because it could turn into a, we have to work through some of those issues, how we're going to manage that. Yes. Yes.
Mayor, you mentioned that might be a couple $1 million left on the table by underassessment of commercial properties. Well, I'm thinking about the mall area and how it's a lot of empty stores there, big box stores. And are you going to have qualified assessors to come up with a proper assessment? Because I remember that assessed value should be reflect market value. Well, obviously, the market value in that area really went down.
Well, it's so low right now that that thing could get empty and it'd still be worth more than what's being assessed at, to be perfectly honest with you. It's, you go down through that corridor, out-of-town owners that own those properties, and they are shocked at how little they pay in property taxes in Terre Haute, Indiana. They pay more in Clinton and Sullivan and Brazil and elsewhere for the same store, like a McDonald's or just, you know, any big name brand kind of a thing that you would talk about. It's supposed to be market driven. So if you pay $1 million for a piece of property, it doesn't mean it has to be assessed at $1 million, because maybe you overpaid. You know, there's some balance to that and there's some formula you use, but it shouldn't be $65,000, just as one example that a lot of us have heard about. All of those businesses are underassessed, and they just need to be fair. Nobody should pay one more penny in taxes than what your value of your property should be. Tax caps are permanent. They're never going to go away. And when those commercial businesses are not paying what they should be paying because they're underassessed, it means everybody else is pushed to the caps. And so it'll take some, it'll take the pressure off the residential and farmland and apartment buildings in those first two 1%, 2% categories. I think it's going to get fixed. I really do. The DLGF, Department of Local Government Finance, is very much on this. They just don't have a lot of teeth, and so they're going to be going to the legislature next session looking to do some things to help them, help the process, help assessors across the state, and just make sure it's fair. That's all we're trying to do. That's all I'm promoting. Yes, sir.
Yes, you mentioned phase one, I think, for Lafayette Avenue from Cross Lane to Pink Park. Well, this year, because sure as they have a lot of improvements with Fort Harrison all the way down to Locust.
Well, we're paving that whole stretch. I mentioned that too. So we're paving from Locust to Fort Harrison this year, the whole stretch, just south of Fort Harrison. I think it's about a half a block south. So it's going to be a mess. That's what I was saying. Lafayette will be pretty disruptive this year, but we will pave that entire stretch of Lafayette. And then we'll have to come back and do phase two of that. The stuff in front of those fast food restaurants, we have to connect that stormwater drainage into our system. And so it'll be a phase two of that. Yep. Okay. I'll stay here as long as I need to and chat with you. Thank you for coming. God bless each and every one of you.